Hi, Dog Mamas. This is Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach Carolinas and a well-oiled canine. This podcast is dedicated to all things natural wellness for dogs. We'll spend time talking about nutrition, essential oils, homeopathy, and other things that you as a dog mama can implement in your own wellness journey. We also take this opportunity to remind you that this presentation is for educational purposes only. Nothing in this is intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness. This is not intended to replace any veterinary care. You are encouraged to discuss your own medical concerns and the individual needs of your pet with your veterinarian. So now I invite you to come, sit, and stay well as you enjoy the show.
Okay. All right. So good morning, everybody. This is Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach and Well-Oiled Canine. And Jennifer Carter's back today to give us a little more detail, or rather to talk about her own personal experiences with her dogs, Simba and Harley. So Jennifer, take it away.
All right. Well, thank you, Dana, for having me back.
Glad to have you here.
Switch gears a little bit today, and in our first podcast we talked about Volhard Dog Nutrition, the company for which I work, but today we're going to switch gears and talk about how I even started on the path of using wellness and nutrition for my dogs. Mm-hmm. Obviously it usually is something that is happening to you personally, that is close to you. Right. That prompts you to go into action at some point. Right. And although I do not wish this upon anyone, I have expanded myself prompted by my dog's needs, honestly. And that continues to this day, no matter what I'm feeding, because dogs, their health constantly changes, just like a human being's health changes as they age or if they're active. And so I have, I've had, you know, I'll go back just a couple of years and talk about where I started, and I had three dogs at one time, and, all of them were into different things. They all had their little personalities and they were into different things. So they experienced different things because of that. So to get started in our conversation, I will start with my dog that's no longer with me anymore, Simba. He was a funny little dude. He was a Chihuahua who was brindle in color, and he was called a deer Chihuahua, somebody told me once, because he was all legs, and he wasn't like your short little average, you know,
right,
small snouted Chihuahua. He was about 10 pounds and genetically very healthy, despite me. And he's the one that really sent me down the road of nutrition, only because I was living in Northern Virginia at the time, and he got diagnosed with stage 2 kidney failure.
Oh no.
Yeah. And he was about, I would say 12 or 13 at this point. So he was a senior dog. He was up there in his years, and although acting completely healthily, he was exhibiting some things that, you know, in his blood work and things that were starting to show the doctors that he was struggling with kidney issues. Gotcha. So the first response from the vet when we were in Northern Virginia was, you need to put him on a prescription diet.
Of course.
For kidney issues. And this, just to give you a reference point, this was at a time in my life where I had not been exposed to a lot of fresh feeding. I was feeding kibble at the time. Mm-hmm. I was feeding him a very good kibble. It wasn't an inexpensive version of kibble by any means. And I thought I was doing the right thing by him, not putting together what may have contributed to that kidney situation, or right, what might not have, you know, what might not have, sorry. So with the diagnosis came a small amount of panic, of course, because then his mortality really came to bear. And, you know, in my mind, Chihuahua is a small dog. He was very lean. He was not an obese dog whatsoever. He basically was a lean, mean machine. He never had a weight problem. And I thought to myself, how could this happen to me and my dog? He's supposed to live till 20 or something because he's a little chihuahua, right? Well, here's a chink in his armor now. So things that I had to look out for were dehydration, they told me, and emaciation, where they won't eat.
Okay.
And they lose their appetite. So those were two things. And a lot of folks that have dogs that suffer with kidney disease, they have to go into the vet regularly and they have to get fluids for their dog because they constantly are dehydrated.
Right.
So what prompted me, and now at first, I'm just like everybody else. I'm thinking I'm going to do exactly what the vet tells me to do because I want my dog to be healthy. And I understood very clearly, but I needed the progression of the kidney disease to slow or stop. That's what I was trying to go for. Mm-hmm. And so I was listening to my vet and I said, we're going to do everything that we possibly can. And they put him on a number of different herbs and medication. I forget the name of it right off the top of my head, but it wasn't really a chemical medicine. It was like a set of herbs that were supposedly were going to help him. It was very expensive, whatever it was. It was extremely expensive, and he went through it 2 pills a day, so we went through it like water.
Wow.
But and so he would be often on antibiotics over this time to keep inflammation down and to try to keep the kidneys healthy and all of those things, and he wanted to put him on.
Know then what antibiotics were doing to the gut health?
Not at all. Had no reference point whatsoever.
Right.
Being a person, I know that when I eat antibiotics, I always ingest yogurt or something to help me not have distress from the antibiotics. But I never put that together for my dog.
Right?
I just didn't. And so here I am following his guidelines to the letter, and my dog won't eat the prescription dog food. So this became a problem because one of the issues with kidney disease is emaciation. So if my dog's not eating the food, then preventing emaciation is a problem. So that's what made me think. That was a crossroads for me. Now what do I do?
Right.
My dog's not taking in food, and he's taking in all these medications that are helping him. I know that this is unbalanced now. What is happening? So that really prompted me to ask harder questions and to seek out different answers than what I was getting from the veterinarian. And having a background in biology and animal science, I thought, well, this is probably within my capability to at least really start to dust off and see what I can do for him. So I started to cook for him. And I'll be honest with you, it was very stressful because I was very aware of an unbalanced diet. And even though it was wonderful that he was eating whatever he was eating, I had this feeling in the back of my mind that I was not doing him a service by feeding him a diet that I just created that potentially could be seriously unbalanced and causing different problems from the original.
And many people make that mistake. I mean, I run into that every single day. They're like, I just want my dog to eat. So they'll make some, and it's usually rice and chicken. I'm like, your dog's eating, he's alive today, but where are we headed with this? And they just don't know. I mean, I didn't know what I didn't know either. So I get it. I totally understand where you were.
Yeah, it was a lot of pressure. And I would literally lay my head on the bed and stress because I thought, here I'm trying to extend his life. And I just don't want him to come up deficient somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his blood work was going to be good for a while. You know, it didn't much change from when I left dog food and went to cooking. So here I was humming along, trying to think, you know, as best I could with what I knew, limited information on how to create dog food, which I did not know how to do. So all of a sudden, let me see if I time this right. Enter Wendy Volhard. She did come in before we got Harley. Harley is my little Yorkshire Terrier. So enter the scene, Wendy Volhard. And I met her through a friend. and was introduced, and we got to talking, and I shared with her what was happening with Simba. And she immediately said, you need to get Simba on the AMPM diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what that meant.
Right.
I said, okay, you know, how is that different from what I'm doing now? How is that different from kibble? And I tried to explain to her what I was trying to do with him. And she said, trust me, this is what he'll eat it, and this is what he needs. So I did. I began the journey of introducing AMPM to Simba.
Mm-hmm.
And this diet was supposedly going to help him because he was senior. It was going to help him because he was battling illness, and it was going to be balanced. And all I had to do was add, I could control the vegetable, which was super good. Mm-hmm. Because that allowed me to pick kidney-friendly vegetables. It allowed me to maintain a low phosphorus diet, which is something that is really important for the kidneys. And it had low sodium. And so all of those things were agreeable,
right,
with what his prognosis was. And so I started to feed that. And I, in the evening meal, that PM meal, I was allowed to choose whatever protein I wanted. So I could, with kidney issues, they say to feed a fattier meat. So I actually introduced, in addition to beef, I introduced lamb for him. And made it a little, you know, little in the way that it was higher fat, higher protein situation for him. So this was really the beginnings for me. Because of his illness, I had to go online and I had to research, what is everybody doing? What do they talk about? What works?
Mm-hmm.
And then I translated that into a flexible diet, which was the AMPM diet, which allowed me to manipulate the ingredients. Well, I'm going to tell you that Simba lived till 17, and the doctor had pretty much told me that we were on a downhill slide with him, and that it wouldn't be much longer, and I need to reconcile that with my thought process.
He told you that at diagnosis time when he was
diagnosis. Yeah, that's what I was walking into this with, mm-hmm. you know, trying to reconcile that my dog was not going to live his 20 years, and that he might be sick, very sick, and all of those things, right? And by introducing the fresh diet, which I'm going to tell you, for those of you who are also suffering with a dog with kidney issues, the two major things that I said in the beginning were emaciation, so you got to get them to eat something, and then dehydration. Well, duh, feeding a hydrated diet to a dog that needs to maintain hydration seems really obvious after you hear it.
Exactly.
I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know why I didn't put that together in the beginning.
Yep.
But once it was said to me, I was like, Eureka.
Yeah. And so just to explain a little bit about that, you know, if you don't mind, because
sure.
This is a very moist diet. We add moisture to it and water goes in with the food. Whereas, now that we know better, the whole notion of a dry food for a dog that needs moisture befuddles me because of the organ robbing concept that takes place to get moisture to begin the digestion process. So can you share a little about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's so logical once it's placed in front of you that it just seems ridiculous that I didn't think of it first. Yeah. I mean, honestly, So here's this. So here I have this fresh diet to which I can add as much water as I want. So if on hotter days, I can make it soupier,
yeah,
so that I know he's getting water. I could add bone broth instead of water if I wanted for its healing properties.
Mm-hmm.
I could make bone broth with vegetables to really infuse that, or herbs to infuse that healing opportunity,
right,
without having to tell your dog, hey, buddy, you're not drinking enough water. How about you drink some water? They just look at you like, whatever, I don't want that. But when you put it in the diet like this and it's flavored,
mm-hmm,
then all of a sudden they drink whatever amount of water you put in front of them. And this was a real breakthrough because I never, not once, had to take Simba to the veterinarian to get hydrated.
Right.
And he was really surprised about that.
Yeah,
the vet was. So let's just think about this for just a second now. I got an extra 2 or 3 years out of my dog because when I switched to the fresh diet that Wendy pointed out, he stabilized. And in the process, I switched vets, not for nothing. We switched to one that was more nutritionally oriented and open-minded mm-hmm. to what I was trying to do, because I did not want to pump his last years full of medicines. I wanted to try to use nutrition as best I could to lengthen his life. So, you know, with that, I need a partner that will allow me the freedom to try things that I think might work. So in that process, I switched veterinarians. We still remained on this herb that was supposedly helping to flush out the toxins from his system. And with the fresh diet, he stabilized. He wasn't getting better, but he wasn't getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to create a great quality of life for him for as long as that could possibly last. And it lasted another 3 years. And he was a happy-go-lucky little boy who had his quirks because of the kidney failure. And he died of old age. You know, it was his time to go when it was his time to go. And it was not the kidneys that took him. It was he had lost his eyesight, and then his hearing kind of went, and then a little dementia came in. But other than that, he died an old man.
Right.
And I was very thankful for those extra.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Here, I want to add a filter on this, because this is what made me dive even deeper into nutrition. And so Simba had gotten, he wasn't feeling well. He was older, and we decided to adopt a Yorkie. Her name was Harley. And she was a cute little thing who the breeder told us she was a runt, and we weren't allowed to breed her because she wouldn't live through childbirth. And, you know, we had all these stipulations mm-hmm. when we took her, and we took her as a pet. We just wanted her to be part of our family. And so we took her in. Well, I shortly learned thereafter that little Harley, although they told me she would only be 4 pounds, turned out to be 8 pounds because she decided she was going to be a much bigger dog. And she was a little pistol, and she suffered from environmental issues.
Mm.
Things that bloom and things that mold are not her friend.
Right.
And so I didn't know any of this when I chose that breed. I chose the dog. I didn't choose the breed specifically, although I've been around Yorkies. She was the one that stole my heart, so I went with that. And with that said, in her younger time, these issues did not show themselves,
mm-hmm.
right? She was a happy-go-lucky dog, no problems. Here I have Simba, who's sort of doing his thing, and she came into our lives, and she helped him to be, you know, wanting to move forward, because he got all upset when she got in his space, and she really got his blood going every now and again, you know, as puppies do, to help the elderly want to continue living, because they just want to make the puppy's life, you know, hell.
Right.
So
he played the grandpa role.
He sure did. And so, and it was quite funny, because he was an only dog for quite a period of time, and she only knew other dogs, so she wanted to sit next to him, and he would have no part of that. Mm-hmm. She would sit down next to him, and he would move over, like 2 inches, so that she was not touching him.
Goodness.
And that, as he got older, that changed. And I would love to tell you that she was his seeing eye dog, but everybody just left him, pretty much. He was on his own, whether he could see or not. I tried to get her to look out for him, but it didn't really work out. Not in the terrier breed, just so we have an understanding.
Yeah.
So she started to exhibit all of these environmental allergies. So now I have one dog that's got internal issues with their urinary system, and I have another dog that is breaking out in these black, crusty spots all over her belly. Every time the grass touches her, she's having trouble. If she swims in the lake, she's having trouble. If things are blooming and the pollen is going in her face, her eyes become super runny, and she's off to the vet we go. Great. I do not want my dog to suffer. So off to the vet we go. why is this happening? You don't understand why this is happening. And he says, I'm going to put your dog on steroid and antibiotics, and we will knock this puppy right out. Well,
literally
6 years later. Yeah. 6 years later, this poor child is still on steroids and antibiotics almost around the clock all year long. And when asked him about it, and she was, this was still a time when I was, she was on kibble in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So she was on kibble in the beginning, and I was, you know, doing the one, homemade kind of thing for Simba. She's on kibble. And when we switched Simba to AMPM, we ended up switching Harley to AMPM. And I didn't know what it was going to do, honestly. I knew what it was doing for Simba, but he had a different problem. I didn't know what it was going to do for Harley.
Right.
And I went back to Wendy. And after the veterinarian said to me that plan on your dog being on antibiotics and steroids for the rest of her life. This is who she is. She's got this problem. And I thought to myself, after the situation with Simba, how could this be?
Mm-hmm.
Can't be. I know what people are like on prednisone all the time, and this is not good. This is another little dog, 8-pounder, who is going to have a shortened life because she's taking in all of these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So herein lies my conundrum once again with the veterinarian, you know. Okay, so we put 6 years in with her being on, and believe me, they worked. They worked, and then they didn't work. And then they worked, and then they didn't work. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I couldn't figure out how to stop that cycle of having to keep taking her back to the vet. And this was not a cheap endeavor now.
Right.
Having to maintain her environmental allergies was not cheap. So I sat down and I talked to Wendy, and I don't know what made me come full circle around with Wendy again. You know, sometimes it's just because you're dealing with another issue. And she said, put her on AMPM. And I said, but she's not a senior dog. And she's like, there's something in the kibble that is not agreeing with your dog. You're never going to know what it is because there are things that are listed on the ingredients and not listed on the ingredients. It could be in the processing.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in the 100% processed version of that food. Right. Whatever it is, you're probably never going to know what it is. And I was feeding her from at the time, beef frittata. It was a very nice and expensive
a frittata
meal. Yes, it was quite lovely. Smelled fine, but something in there, and this has no bearing on that dry food. This is the way her body was acclimating that dry food. It might not happen for someone else,
right?
But this was happening for the dog that was sitting in front of me.
Right.
And for her, this was not a good match. And I took away that wonderful dry kibble meal and I replaced it with the AMPM. And I tried to pick vegetables and try and experiment with different vegetables to see what she could tolerate and what she could not tolerate. And we did a little bit of whole milk yogurt in the morning meal and then beef in the afternoon because Wendy said beef was neutral.
Right.
And it should not cause an allergic response in her. So I said, okay, let's try it. So I put her on the food. Long story short, I have not been back with Harley since I switched her to AMPM, a fresh diet. I have not been back to the vet for skin issues in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
She is no longer on antibiotics. She is no longer on steroids. So there is hope. If you're willing to be open-minded about the approach to feeding your dog,
right.
It saves me the money that I spend on the food. Yes, the food is more expensive slightly than from. From is not a cheap food, so
right.
It's slightly more expensive.
And by the time you add in antibiotics and steroids
right.
and Apoquel or whatever else may be going mm-hmm. on, you're certainly
and vet visits
because yeah.
they don't do all that for free.
Right.
You have to bring your dog in. They don't do it out of the goodness of their heart.
Right.
And I bought my veterinarian between Simba and Harley. He's got a boat or a second home or I don't, he put his kids through college. Yes. I don't know what happened, but I was putting out some real money to the vet and time, because every time she had a breakout, I had to take her, which means I'm coming away from other things that need to happen in my life.
Well, and not just time, but your stress, the emotion piece of that for you and her misery. I mean, it's just it's awful. Yeah.
So this has been a journey. And I want to say, like, when I first started, when you try to fix a problem with nutrition, it takes time. And so the biggest advice that I could give people is you have to give the chance for the actual diet to work. And you can't throw the kitchen sink at it. Because what happens, and it's well-intended, and I find myself guilty of the same thing, that you want to try all these things to create as much relief as quickly as possible. But if you throw the kitchen sink nutritionally at a dog, then what happens is you can't keep track of what's actually working and what is not working, what's contributing to the problem. So if you introduce things slowly, like on with nothing else, no supplements at first, just that diet. And I let her body acclimate to that food for months. And I started to see some of the symptoms go away, not completely, but start to go away. Only then did I try the next thing. So, and I keep a log. So when you have a dog that's suffering and you can't really pinpoint why it's suffering, creating a log is super important, because if you're trying different things, then you want to give yourself feedback on how that's working. So if I tried a new vegetable in the AM part of the diet, I would mark down, did that vegetable create gurgly stomach? Did that vegetable create gasish, you know, emanations? Did that vegetable make her constipated or loosen her stool? Mm-hmm. Was she itching more, less, the same? I tried to create real little checklists for myself so that if I introduced a vegetable that was not well received, we never made that same mistake again.
Right.
So one of the things that Harley used to have on top of everything else, and one could never tell why it was happening, was she would have very loud gurgly stomach. Very, very loud. And who knows why? I couldn't pinpoint why that was happening. It would happen very sporadically, but it would be very obvious and she would be very uncomfortable and she would not sleep at night because she was freaked out by the own sounds of her own body. And she would come to me when it happened. So I knew when it happened because she would always come to me for support. And I would try, you know, homeopathic remedies like Carbo-Veg to try to get that stomach to calm down. And, you know, I would try different things, ultimately learning through experimentation on what things work better than others for her. She was not a grass eater. So when her stomach upset her, she did not really go out and graze on grass. That wasn't her jam. So that wasn't a tell for me. And normally when your dog's stomach's upset, you know, you can see them start to graze like a cow. And then you're like, something is odd here. That was not a tell for her. It would be this gurgly stomach though. And she would burp constantly. She was the burp dog, which is not feminine for the cutest Yorkie on the earth.
Right.
Just saying, like in public. So I, you know, in this process, you know, one of the things I promised to share with you is sort of this got me to dive deeper into nutrition. And one of those things was when I learned about the microbiome, which inadvertently happened as time went by and popularity and talking about the microbiome surged. Then I started to think to myself, huh, I wonder what Harley's microbiome looks like. She's been on steroids and antibiotics for a very large part of her life. I wonder if that is not an issue. And I've done all kinds of tests. I did the Glacier Peaks test, and no matter which way you fall out on the Glacier Peaks test, I have since learned that I can't count on that test in the same way that I thought I could when I first got it done. Mm-hmm. I still use it though. I still use it with the idea of it not being 100% tried and true, but it gives me a point that I can start to eliminate things on based on what the results were. Is it as guaranteed as a blood test? No. But there's no really good allergy test out there. So honestly, it's shooting in the wind no matter which one you get.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still glad I did it. And I still use it as some kind of reference material. And I did the microbiome test. There's a company called Animal Biome that does a very nice comprehensive test. And you send in, it's non-invasive, which is what I liked about it. You stalk your dog for, you know, stool. And then you put it in the little vial they send, which has a preservative in it. You mail that back to them. And in a couple of weeks, they send you a very comprehensive report about the bacteria that is currently sitting in your dog's body, in their digestive tract.
Right.
And they compare that to that of a healthy dog. Now, this is a moving target too. It's not 100%. It's a snapshot.
Mm-hmm.
This is a snapshot of what your dog looks like in a period of time. And the next time you do it 2 weeks later, it could be slightly different. But it gives you the snapshot of the health of the intestine of your dog. And this was really important to me because I was trying to eliminate the whole gurgly stomach thing. And I was trying to eliminate. So here's what I learned. That the gut and the brain are basically connected through the vagus nerve. And if you can imagine, for those of you who know what Interstate I-81 is, it's this huge interstate, you know, Florida to Maine. This is the same visual that I want to give you. The vagus nerve connects the gut to the brain like I-81. Mm-hmm. Messages can come and go back and forth, and 84% of your dog's immune system is connected to the gut. So now I'm smarter. Because time has passed and I've really done some research and now I'm a little bit smarter pet parent. And I'm thinking to myself, could I help to support Harley's immune system by taking a look at her gut and making sure that that is as close to functional as it could possibly be? That's what prompted me to do the test, folks.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent away and I got the test results back. Now I'm going to tell you this. This is Jennifer's tip of the day. Every time you introduce an antibiotic to your dog, and sometimes you have to, so this is not me telling you not to give your dog antibiotics if they need them, but every time you do, it takes 8 months for the dog's gut to recover from that. Antibiotics are not negative bacteria specific. They kill good bacteria and bad bacteria. They just eliminate bacteria. So what happens is, if you sterilize the gut through an antibiotic, whichever bacteria is the strongest grows and proliferates the fastest. That could be a negative or a bad bacteria or pathogen that, because there's no good bacteria left and it's not growing fast enough, that pathogen is allowed to proliferate. That could be yeast too, folks. That could be yeast, right? So you get what's called dysbiosis, which is an imbalance in the gut where the bad bacteria outgrows the good bacteria. And then what you see as a pet parent is itching, scratching, yeast infections, runny eyes, poor digestion, vomiting, diarrhea. You see all of these symptoms, which are actually leading back to this imbalance in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
So here, now let me share this with you, Harley's results. This was such an empowering moment for me. And I hope I'm sharing it because I want it to be an empowering moment for all of you. There's normally 14 or 15 strains of good bacteria that sit in a dog's gut at any one time. Remember, I said it's a moving target. So 14 one time, or there could be more or less. So with that said, I got back Harley's results. And what it showed was she had about 6 strains of good bacteria.
Wow.
Out of the 14 or 15 that should be present.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Well, that means that you have a warehouse with a bunch of jobs to get done and you've only got 2 people to do it. That's what that means.
Staffed.
She normally would have had 100 people to do it. You are clearly understaffed in the way of bacteria.
Exactly.
And the interpretation of which bacteria she had. So the strains all have a job. Each of these strains of bacteria bacteria have a job.
That's right.
One of those bacteria might help you digest carbohydrate. One of those bacteria might help you digest protein. One may cause the body to be obese. One may cause the body to have a pathogenic response. Mm-hmm. So, with that said, they give you these parameters, and I had a moment where I was like, oh my goodness, this is a root cause of multiple issues. How do I change that?
Right.
Well, enter Billy Hochman from Answers. Now, this is a funny thing. I went to a health summit. This is what you got to do, folks. Yeah. If you're the least inclined, you got to turn up somewhere that you've never been before, and you got to listen open-mindedly to other people talk about nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Hochman from Answers was speaking at this health summit in Northern New Jersey, and I attended. I was sitting in the audience, and he said, talked about fermented vegetables. And in that moment, I was like, mind blown. What? And he made such obvious statements, you know, just like I said earlier, with the hydration thing, you don't know it sometimes until it's sitting right in front of you.
Right.
And I, at that moment, said, I wonder how much power I actually have over the gut if I were to introduce good bacteria, live, living bacteria, not powdered bacteria that needs to be turned on and activated, living bacteria, if I introduce that and it starts to live in the mouth and goes all the way through the digestive tract. Enter my experiment with sauerkraut. Sauerkraut is fermented cabbage.
Yep.
And I started to include fermented cabbage in Harley's diet every time I fed her. And then I retested her for the gut microbiome, first in 6 months and then again in a year. Long story short, you have so much power over your dog's gut, you have no idea. And what I did was start to change her gut. In 6 months, I saw right away that she was moving toward a positive change. In a year, within a year, with conscious effort of unpasteurized milk and yogurt being added to her diet, different types of good bacteria, some fermented vegetables, plus I also used the Volhard digestive enzymes, which have probiotics in them.
Sure.
So I inundated her body with a variety of probiotics and living enzymes. And within a year, I just about fixed her gut.
Yeah.
What did I see on the outside? I saw no itching. I saw less runny eyes. I saw no more breakouts. I saw her digesting her food better and her stools getting even smaller and firmer and where they needed to be. No more gurgly stomach anymore. Gone. History. And for me, what I started to see in her was that I could control those immune responses over the course of the year. Remember, I talked about logbook. So I started to jot down for myself, when were her flares? And it turned out for me, as soon as things started blooming, all the way until they stopped blooming and they were growing.
Right.
Then in the fall, when things started to mold and the trees were falling off the leaves, she's a low rider little dog. She's taking it all to the face.
I'm sorry. You said trees fell off the leaves.
No. Oh, sorry. Hey, that's to see if you guys were paying attention.
That's a problem. If that starts happening, we have a real issue.
We just have leaves suspended with no tree. the leaves started to fall off the tree and rot on the ground, you know,
right.
And they start to mold. And I could change her diet and swap up probiotics so that I could lessen her response.
Right.
Now, I'll be honest with you. Is it 100% gone? No, because she goes outside. The only way it could be 100% gone for a dog that's got environmental allergies is to keep her in a clean environment, sterile. It's not going to happen. She's a dog.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to go to the bathroom, not in my house, but in the yard. And she needs to be a dog. Or what's the point of it?
Right.
So I did not eradicate all the symptoms completely because that would be a false statement on my part. But what I do is I manage those symptoms from expressing at a much greater and lesser amount than they did when she had no supported immune system.
Right.
So I hope that helps to kind of understand how you know, it takes, and all that stress goes away. And all that money that's just leaking out of your pockets goes away. It does take some time, and it does take some focus on your part to paying attention to your dog and to observing in a way you probably never wanted to observe your dog. But sometimes we are given these challenges because somebody somewhere knows that that dog would have had a very bad life if it weren't for you being the pet parent.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I embraced it.
Yeah.
That's where I was going with that. I just embraced it.
That's awesome. And you've shared a whole bunch of stuff in here, and I have a couple of questions if we can kind of
sure.
through them. But, you know, one of the things that I think is telling about what you're talking about is how the AM diet is so customizable, mm-hmm. you know, and that, you know, sometimes I think people, when we talk about food, we've learned from the vet in some way that these prescription diets are supposed to solve everything. And so they're thinking a food all by itself is going to work all the magic. And sometimes we're going to have to tweak and customize that for the individual need or the changes that occur as we age, our environment, or whatever that may be. And so that's pretty awesome. But one of the things that I think is interesting is that even her little microbiome, her gut health, years after all those antibiotics, and even after you had been on the Volhard AMPM for quite some time, was still understaffed, underwhelmed, right? Yeah. And, you know, you talk about the 8 months. I've heard it can take as much as 18 months. But you were seeing still a problem hanging out there for mm-hmm. a long time. And I want people to understand that it's not
a quick fix.
Plastic remedy. We have to figure right. out, and I love the approach that you take. I take the same. Little by little, let's build our way forward and see what's left and then fill that gap and then fill the next gap if we need to. So, but you talked about gas and you talked about the gurglies and you talked about the inappropriate dainty little burps she has.
Yes.
You know, I see people on Facebook all the time laugh and giggle about their dog's farts and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that shouldn't be happening. That's
no.
not normal. I mean, it is normal, but it shouldn't be the way the digestive system really works. If the gurgles are happening or there's a lot of gas, there's something going on in the digestive system we need to support. And
you're absolutely right.
For me is like Huey. So they've been on NDF2 for years. And I noticed in the last, probably about 6 months ago, that his little belly started gurgling where it never used to. And I'm like, what's wrong with that? What's going on?
Right.
So I started working more on more probiotics, more digestive enzymes. And that's not to say that his diet is broken. It's just that his little body now needs extra care. Right?
Yeah. And you brought up something really important, Dana. And I'll tell you. So Harley's been on the Volhard diet for 5 years. Very good diet. You say, I shouldn't be having any issues because my dog is on this powerhouse diet, right? Well, dogs change as they get older, and their digestibility changes. So as you naturally get older, they make less enzymes sometimes. And so that changes, and you can't see that on the outside. So here's where wellness visits come in. So my dog is 10 now, and she goes to the vet twice as a healthy dog, okay? And in those healthy dog visits, we do blood work.
Yeah.
This last time that she had her senior blood work done, which was a full spectrum, her liver enzymes were elevated. Now, immediately, somebody's going to go and say, it's the food. It's not the food, you guys. It is the dog. So the dog that's 10 is not the same dog that was 4, potentially. So things happen. Things change in the dog's body.
Mm-hmm.
So what did I do when that happened? I did not panic. I did not swap foods. I didn't create this crisis mode. I stopped for a second and I thought, what time of year is it? If you are any kind of a fan of Chinese medicine, then in the spring is liver season.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow that, if the liver, because the energy from the body is in the liver, if the liver is a weak organ, things are going to express. That may be elevated liver enzymes. It's telling you that your dog's liver needs some support.
Mm-hmm.
So what did I do? I changed only one thing. I use a product called, from Standard Process, called Liviplex.
Mm-hmm.
And for 3 weeks, I helped to detox her liver by adding these herbs. It's an herbal product. And I added the herbs to her food. Her diet was a normal diet,
yep,
same as before. And within 3 weeks, I retested her ALT, which is the one that was had peaked, and it had gone back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So the liver was crying for support. I use the Liviplex to support that. It's milk thistle and some other things, dandelion, stuff like that, all herbs, to help her body detox and support that liver. And then it passed. So now I'm thinking to myself, make a note in my little journal.
Next
I have a senior dog. Next year at the same time, don't be surprised, Jennifer, that this dog may express some liver support needed. Because this is who she is.
Yeah. Well, so, I get proactive about those things now too, especially with my seniors or, you know, at vaccine time, if we have to have a vaccine like rabies, and I know you and I've discussed that before, but
right.
Many people still do. So I'm like, we got to support that liver. We got to take care of it.
Right.
When your neighbors start spraying the chemicals in their yard in the summer, guess mm-hmm. what we have to do? And so my dogs get a proactive liver supportive 3 week period at least once a year.
Yep.
Just do.
Yep.
And that's not a food thing. That's a environment thing, right?
And it's a dog's body. It's an individual dog's body thing. Yeah. You know, that's why we do wellness visits, guys. Mm-hmm. That's why we go, so that we can grab on to the fact that something is changing in our dog's body,
yeah,
and then we can support that dog before it becomes a disease.
Exactly.
Before she has liver damage.
Exactly.
You know, that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
We're trying to get ahead of it, you know, and this is, I'll pose this challenge to you. If my dog was not already on a good diet, imagine the damage that would have happened in that instance when the liver needed support and she wasn't healthy already.
Right. Exactly.
So that's the part that you really need to get in front of. You know, people say, I don't understand how she got sick. I think how sick she would have been.
Yeah.
If I hadn't already made the decision to be feeding her a fresh diet that allowed her body to be as healthy as it possibly could be up to that point.
Right.
So yeah. you have to think, you know, differently mm-hmm. than most of us have in the past, which is more reactive thinking. Wait till your dog gets sick and then react to it. I have reactive thinking. Don't get me wrong. Our dogs get hurt. You have to react to that. You can't predispose that that's going to happen. Our dogs get older. So we try to put as many proactive roadblocks in place to help manage that. You have to be somewhat reactive. But what I'm challenging you to do is to try to get in front of that and be more proactive than you are reactive.
Yep. I'll throw a shameless plug. I would use essential oils in my liver detox work, but
what oils would you use?
I look at ylang ylang and ledum specifically to support the liver. There's some others, but those are my go-to when I'm doing sort of this detox work in that area. And
that's great to know.
You can just apply it directly over their liver area once a day. And I'll include it into a protocol that includes like the milk thistle supplementation category, and I'll do the essential oils as well, and we really focus on giving some TLC to the body.
I use essential oils also, not as much as I should because I'm not as fluent in their application.
I can help you with that.
yep, but I am open to that, and I try to use as much homeopathy as I possibly can. Also, not my strongest area, getting stronger every day because I'm interested, but I'm trying to make these applications more frequently both for myself and for the dogs.
Yep. So just want to revisit the diet for your kidney guy.
Yeah. Simba.
Simba. I wanted to say Stanley. That wasn't right.
He would have answered to that.
So we know that a kidney diet is it is always said to go into a low phosphorus diet. Can you just tell folks a little bit about what some of the protein options that are low phosphorus? I know you went into lamb, which includes more fat.
I did.
But what does that mean to go low phosphorus when we're feeding a fresh diet?
So certain foods, all foods have all different nutrient values to them. Mm-hmm. Some foods have a higher phosphorus level. That could be vegetable or meat. And some foods have a lower phosphorus level, vegetables or meat. And so what really has to happen is when you're deciding, like with the AMPM diet, I had to add some required things. So the diet itself, the foundation mix itself, I reached out to Volhard because it was in the beginning. I didn't work for the company then.
Yeah.
So I was not privy to Volhard's information at that time. But I reached out to Volhard and I asked them to share with me the phosphorus and sodium levels because you don't want certain minerals at higher levels because they make the kidneys work.
Right.
So phosphorus happens to be one of those. Sodium is another one that's one of those. You probably run into this with dogs who have stones. Mm-hmm. That's usually a very common way that somebody learns about minerals and kidneys is usually because they're stones. He didn't have stones or anything, but it is recommended that those levels remain low so that the kidneys don't have to work quite as hard.
Right.
Some trains of thought are that you do a lower protein diet. Some trains of thought are that you do a limited ingredient diet. Yeah,
exactly.
Some trains of thought require Hill Science diet. So, you know, depends on who you talk to.
Right.
You know, you're going to get their view based on whatever their predisposed knowledge is of nutrition. That doesn't mean it's right. It just means it's their view. It's up to you to do the research ultimately. I'll take in anybody's view, but then I'm going to do the research and I'm going to make an informed decision. So I wouldn't limit talking to anybody about their view. You are, however, in control of what goes in your dog's mouth. So ultimately, you can decide what you think is best for your dog. They're only making recommendation, as I am here.
Right.
So I took in all this information from everyone, and I thought to myself, well, we've already been through the science diet approach, and he didn't eat it. So it does nothing if it's not ingested, no matter how important you think that food is.
Right.
So, you know, that was not an option for us. Now, I was also battling other things with Simba. I really believe that his sense of smell was limited. So dogs eat food and are attracted to food through their sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is limited in some way, Simba preferred foods that were very pungent, that were over the top smelling.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, that prescription diet had no smell for him.
Right.
So that could have contributed to why he didn't eat it. Or his body could be telling me that that wasn't the right food. Whatever that is, however you want to interpret that. I took it as it's not the right food for a number of reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing. People will, you know, they'll often say my dog doesn't eat or he doesn't like it. And it's he knows he shouldn't have it. He knows
right.
It's not going to help. And so I see people all the time when their dog is unwell, we start stripping away nutrition.
Exactly. Not the thing to do with a kidney dog.
Nutrition, just trying to get them to eat something rather than getting them nutrition that's going to help them heal.
Right. So that's the really important part about the whole kidney conversation is that stripping away all of the nutrition in order to feed a kidney dog, in my opinion, is not the way to go.
Bad news.
I think the juncture in the road is to get away from a dry diet, 100% processed food that has variables that you can't control and that is dry and not hydrating, to something that is fresh, something flexible where you can control the ingredients that are in it. So the base was low in phosphorus and sodium. That's what I was looking for now. But that's not the end of the day because I have to add meat and I have to add a vegetable. So I need to pay attention to the ingredients that I'm adding to make sure those are additionally low in those elements. One of the schools of thought was that increased fat was something that was very good for a kidney dog. So I went with that because the fat in the lamb, and I, so here's this. So normally you feed Volhard raw if you can. I did not feed him Volhard raw. I braised the meat because he could not smell raw meat. So for me, braising that meat for him, and I didn't cook it till it bounced off the wall. All I did was, you know, a little bit brown on the outside.
Right.
Was to inspire him to eat through smells. And that little bit of cooking just brought that smell to him, and then it excited his system to eat. So for him, that was the right thing to do. And the fat is hugely palatable, right? So we all like fat. Come on. So add some butter to that, and it's better. Same for this little chihuahua. He was like, bring on the lamb chops right here. I want the whole thing, fat and all. And he ate very well. Now, I didn't do lamb 100% of the time. I did some turkey. I sometimes mixed lamb and turkey together to even out the fat ratio. I did beef and lamb sometimes. I also did fish. He was a huge fish dog because fish stinks. So for him, canned mackerel was the bomb. Fish nights were the bomb. Yeah. Because that stuff you could smell two rooms over.
My dog had a fish night. Me not.
Yes.
I like fish night. Fish. I just don't like to cook it.
Yeah, but they like that really fishy. You know, most of us don't really eat the really fishy.
Right.
The sardines and mackerel, he'd love that.
Yep.
And so for him, those afforded huge amounts of omega-3s, antioxidants, huge amounts of DHA and EPA, which are all helping the immune system, and healthy fat profile. So there's two types of fat. Omega-3s, which are really good fats, antioxidants, and omega-6s, which are needed, but tend to cause, if there are too much of them, inflammation.
That's right.
So you got to get that balance right.
Right.
So there are certain ingredients that offer omega-6s, and you have to balance that with your omega-3s. So having fish with some vegetables allows you to balance out those inflammatory fats and the non-inflammatory fats.
Right.
And so that's the thing that I did with him. Marine fish oils helped. Bone broth helped. I made my own bone broth so that I can control. Now bones have phosphorus in them. Okay. So here's the thing. Bone meal, a food with bone meal for a kidney dog can be a problem because the bone meal could be very high in phosphorus. The Volhard diet does not use bone meal for a number of reasons, one of which is mad cow disease and all these things that we can't control where the bones of those cows come from. So we can't be certain that they're not euthanized animals or dying or diseased. We don't want to introduce that into the food. So we use other forms of calcium and phosphorus that we add to the diet in order to make sure that calcium phosphorus ratio is there. But that is a controlled situation, you see? Mm-hmm. So you know how much phosphorus is in the diet versus a homemade version of that where you might not know what your calcium phosphate ratio is. And that may not be good for a kidney dog.
Right.
So all of these things, and it sounds really overwhelming, and I don't mean it to be, but there are these experiments that you can do with a diet like Volhard, which is extremely flexible, like you said, Dana, where you can control the types of vegetables that are healthy for a kidney dog and the types of meats that are healthy. And that can all be found online. You can literally Google which meats have the least amount of phosphorus. Which vegetables are low in phosphorus? And it'll give you a list of very high phosphorus vegetables to very low phosphorus vegetables, and you can make good choices. But these were all things that I had to learn how to do. I had never done that before, looked at a diet with such microscopic, approach.
Right.
But it was a great exercise because as we get older as humans, these things are not different from us. We're going to end up putting our own diets under a microscope at some point. And if you've already practiced with your dog, imagine how intelligent you'll be about that when you have to apply it to yourself.
Yeah. Awesome.
And vice versa.
Okay. Well, thank you for sort of recapping those topics. We're going to come back and one day do a whole topic on like the five element theory, because that's weeks worth of stuff in of itself. But
oh gosh, never, you just start scratching the surface.
I know, but it is a fascinating piece of the puzzle when you're trying to solve some of these issues. So anyway, any final parting words for dog mamas that are like you, or, you know, trying to figure out what do I do for my little guy here who's struggling so much, or any key takeaways?
So here's what I would say. Nutrition is the building block of everything that is your dog. So it should be very common sense to be introspective to your diet, your dog's diet, first and foremost, as you're trying to create a protocol for either a healthy dog or a dog that has just been diagnosed with something. Mm-hmm. That should be your first stop on the train, is what is my dog eating? And if your vet doesn't ask you what your dog is eating, then you should be asking yourself, why is my dog eating this food? And is there something better or different?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it warrants a homemade cook. Sometimes it warrants a commercial diet. Sometimes you try your best and your dog will only give you one or two things that they'll eat. Don't become disheartened. Always look at the diet. See how you can supplement. If your dog for some reason won't eat a fresh diet, I can't imagine why, but but if they won't, you can freshen a kibble diet. You can add things to it to make it better. You're not stuck. And, you know, I talked about two dogs that were suffering with two very different things. One was obviously a disease that was eventually going to end the life of my dog in the kidney situation. The other one was a daily maintenance and comfortability conversation, right? Dog was not going to die from itching, but you listening to the thump, 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 thump every night.
Yeah, it was miserable.
You know, the dog is not happy and it's miserable. Yeah. So two very different kinds of approaches to something. And I was able to manage both of them using nutrition. And that's the take-home message that I want to bring to you. I want you to feel empowered. This is a space where you can be empowered. And there are supplements. There are diets. You got to find the right fit. You've got to have to do experimentation. Don't feel defeated.
Right.
Don't. Just because your dog is not responding right away doesn't mean that your dog won't respond. Remember, when you're fixing a problem with nutrition, it's not like medicine. It's not a quick fix. If your dog is in crisis and you need to apply medicine, do that. That's a short-term solution for a problem that needs to be fixed long-term.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep in mind, there's a place for veterinary medicine.
Of course.
There's a place for medicine that, for dogs in crisis. But then I want you to lift your eyes up off the floor right in front of you. And I want you to look onto the horizon and I want you to say, what is the effect for my dog using nutrition so that we don't have to visit the short-term solution over and over cyclically, like Dana brought up earlier.
Yeah.
And it's these types of podcasts where somebody shares their experience that might trigger something for you that says, wait, I should try that.
Yeah.
And that's all I ask. That's the reason I do these. Is just to, if I don't share the information that I've learned, there's no point in me learning it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing. And that's exactly why I wanted to go to this format. Because I think the story, hearing it from an actual person who has lived it, tried it, the trial and error, the stress of it all, can resonate with people in a way that no Facebook post with a picture is ever gonna do, you know. So I really do appreciate you opening up about your personal stories, but also your depth of knowledge with nutrition, you know, in and of itself. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it's gotten much better over the years. I started where you all started. Yeah. I literally did. I started at the beginning not knowing very much or not being able to apply what I knew. And over the years, over the last 5 years, I would say, I have grown.
Yeah.
And so can you.
Yeah. And for those dog mamas that are out there that are saying, that feels overwhelming to me, Jennifer and I both will help you anyway.
Absolutely. You're not alone. That's for sure. And if you have an issue, bring it to Dana. And if you don't want to bring it to Dana for some reason, you can always PM me.
Well, and we might have a lot of reasons for that.
and I will help however I can. And I, like I always say, if I don't know the answer, and there are things I don't know, mm-hmm. I will find somebody that does, and I will make a connection for you to try to help. Yeah. That's all I can promise.
Sounds good, friend. Well, I appreciate your time. Hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll pick another topic soon.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Dana Brigman of the Canine Coach and Well-Oiled Canine. I'd love to have you be part of the team. As you are learning more about wellness and natural solutions for your own pets, please visit my website, caninecoach.dog, for a lot more information about nutrition, wellness, and behavior for your dogs. If you're interested in learning more about essential oils specifically, please visit my page, welloiledcanine.com. And we'd love to see you in our group. It's a Facebook group called Dogs Well Oiled and Well Fed. You can find it by going to the group section of Facebook, and our name is Well Oiled Canine. We look forward to seeing you there, and I would love to help you with a wellness review or any questions that you have about full hard dog nutrition or essential oils, homeopathy, or wellness for your dogs. Thank you, and have a great day.